our last episode, we sampled a little conversation that, before we get to that.
Guest Eva Bartlett. Hi, Eva. How are you?
Hi, Jimmy. I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on.
So now you really did some groundbreaking reporting on this. Can you just tell briefly what's the biggest misconceptions that people have? Who, if they've been watching the mainstream media, what would be their biggest misconceptions about what's happening in Syria?
That there's something called a civil war or something, some entity called rebels in Syria that are fighting against this caricaturized evil regime that is gunning down his people and gassing his people. Some of the latest lies do revolve around chemical weapons allegations. So the main mythology is that this is all about a popular uprising against the president.
But it's not a popular uprising against the president because it was the CIA and lots of other outside actors, correct, that fomented this through the Arab Spring. Then they kind of brought in outside actors, meaning people supported by Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the CIA also. Is that correct? Is that what's really been happening?
Absolutely. And you have documents from the mid-2000s, you have documents even from the 80s when prior attempts at regime change were enacted. But even taking like this current attempt at regime change, I would highly recommend a Canadian author named Stephen Gowans, who wrote a very thorough article called The Revolutionary Distemper in Syria That Wasn't. And the reason I recommend him is that he links to, well, he gives a lot of historical context. He links to this, these documents and also to actual, surprisingly, corporate media reporters who were on the ground in early 2011 and who were reporting prior to March 2011, which is what we're told were the revolution, the so-called unarmed protest kicked off. He was citing corporate media, New York Times, Time magazine, saying, actually, there's not much will for protest here.
Oh, no kidding. I will check that out. Thanks for the heads up on that. I know that I played on this show a video of an interview between Christian Amanpour from CNN with Assad from 2005, where she was warning him that everybody wanted to overthrow him already and that regime change was the word of the day from the West. So what do you, I wasn't really following the news back then, 12 years ago, that closely, is certainly not as it related to Syria. But do you know what the justification back in like 2005 was that the United States and the West was giving for regime change in Syria back then?
Likewise, like yourself, I wasn't following the news. And I fully admit, back then I was utterly apolitical. The documents that trace back to after September 11th and even prior to, again, referring to Gowan's article, he gets into how the Washington or the West did not like the socialist Baathist government in Syria. And so they had desire to implement a new government which would, you know, acquiesce to their demands on, you know, allowing different international companies in there, extracting oil and natural resources, ending Syria's longstanding support for Palestinians and, support for Hezbollah and other allies, and having Syria make peace with Israel, which is occupying the Syrian Golan and which has warred upon, including recently, many times, Syria. In related to the 2000s, we have the famous kind of speech by General Wesley Clark saying Syria was on the hit list along with six or seven other nations. And there's other documentation, again, referring to Gowan's article, that after September 11th, Syria was put on the hit list, the so-called Axis of Evil or whatever, you know, cartoonish words they were using back then. Certainly, and this is something I think most cognizant people would recognize, it has nothing to do with freedom, democracy, or human rights in Syria, particularly when you consider currently and since 2011, the allies of the West, the ones that have been funding and funneling in terrorists into Syria, be they Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Turkey, and Israel.
So what got you interested in covering Syria? How did that come about? Because a lot of people have been, since you're actually reporting facts that counter the mainstream established news media and our government, people have been impugning your character all over the place. And so just tell everybody here now, what got you interested in Syria, and how did you come about to go there?
Sure. I would just note first, I think that if I toe the line, use the rhetoric of the corporate media and the NATO propagandists, including Amanpour, people would be celebrating me and I'd be wealthy. But because I'm reporting as I see it and I don't have an agenda and nobody's paying me to say what I say, I am being vilified, as you're surely aware. But basically, when things were kicking off in Syria, I had no prior knowledge of Syria. I had no misconceptions or preconceptions about Syria. And I was living in Gaza, in occupied Palestine at the time, doing activism there, trying to bring awareness to the, you know, truly horrifying plight of Palestinians under brutal siege and random bombings and massacres. That said, when things started in 2011, I was also enduring the same power outages as Palestinians in Gaza. I wasn't well informed. But at some point in 2011 and 2012, I started paying very close attention, reading a variety of sources, consulting friends and analysts who I respected, and felt like something was really wrong with what we were being told was happening in Syria. In March 2013, I left Gaza, finally, and went back to Canada. I started asking Syrian Canadians, and their replies to my questions on what was happening in Syria were very interesting, because many of them said You know, when things started in 2011, we were hopeful. We wanted change. We wanted political change in Syria. We wanted, some of us went back to Syria and supported the demonstrations. But very quickly on, they and people in Syria that I later encountered and interviewed said, what we saw was not political change. These were brutal protests. These were thuggish protests, not demanding actual political reforms. So, you know, knowing what I was hearing from people I trusted in Canada, and then going in April 2014 for my first time to Syria, hearing a narrative that was in stark contrast to what we were being told by corporate media, really, I'm sure like yourself, motivated me to do as much as possible to shed some truth on really a vacuum of, lies and manufactured media around Syria.
So if those protests didn't want political change, those thuggish protests that we now find out many of them were outside agitators, the Al-Qaeda, ISIS, people being funded by the CIA, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia. So now, what were the point of those thuggish protests if they weren't for political change?
Well, I mean, some of the initial protests did call for certain things, like the end to the emergency law in Syria, the release of political prisoners, and this is an important note, because these so-called political prisoners included people who were active in the 80s, including Muslim Brotherhood people. And many of these so-called political prisoners went on to join the so-called rebels and have become violent leaders or part of these different Al-Qaeda-affiliated or Al-Qaeda, you know, working with Al-Qaeda groups. Some of the other demands included the lifting of certain laws that pertain to Syria's, and this is, sorry, Jimmy, but this is why I do refer back to the Stephen Gowan's article, because he gives the context of decades prior, what was happening, various attempts of CIA coup d'etats, Syria being at war with Israel, and the fact that, yes, it was an authoritarian government, but there are reasons for it. And meanwhile, this is something I heard from Syrians themselves, they had free education, free healthcare. They were one of the safest countries. Life was affordable. And all of that has been devastated by this foreign war and sanctions on Syria.
Well, we already know, and we've reported on this show, it's well documented that the CIA, acting at the behest of the United States, is not a fan of democracy anywhere. They're what they really want, what the CIA does, and we know this all the way back from General Smedley Butler, who wrote about this and the Banana Wars and all the stuff that happened in South America, is that what the United States does is they go and if there is a government that's socialist, like you say, and they want to keep their natural resources for their own people, instead of giving it to a corporation from the West, what we'll do is send our Marines down there and our CIA, undermine their sovereignty, their government, overthrow them, install a right-wing strongman who is then favorable to our corporations, and then we extract their natural resources and wealth.
Well, Jimmy, you just said a socialist who, and then you talked about their nationalism. Okay, now socialism and nationalism, those are two things that, of course, you can have them together. You can have national socialists, but let me make sure you did just conflate socialism and nationalism. Because she's not going to be able to untangle that, but it's going to give me my segue to talk about both of those things. About the Gringissima snuff monsters that I've had to listen to yesterday on Uprising. So Von Braun disciple Sonali has a guest foisting Gringissima values on 10,000-year-old Damascus. So she does this by projecting our evil, and she says two things. She says barrel bombs, which means improvised bombs, which means they're strapped and up against the wall. They're having to use their oil drums to pack their weapons into, because they do not have an arms industry like their neighbor Israel. Or they wouldn't be using improvised bombs on our 40,000 child-raping death squads. So that's another sick subject, but okay, anyway, socialism means that I wouldn't have needed money to be a doctor, but I happen to know all about the, if it was sarin, then it would have been on their skin. and their handling it would have been absorbed, and then the white helmet dudes would have been dead. But no, those were kidnapped victims from Kitab and Majdib, I think, just like they had been kidnapped in Latakia. Okay, the Alawites kidnapped in Latakia appear in the August 2013 snuff film. And so the latest Gringissima snuff monsters are pointing to this Maj, the kidnap from Kitab and Majdib, I think it was. And so, like the same children appearing in three different rescue things. But so nationalism is one thing, socialism another. Socialism means in any of these countries, you gringissimo snuff monsters just destroyed Iraq, Syria, Libya. I would have been a doctor, okay? I didn't have the money. Had 98th percentile on the science section of AMCAS. So I happen to know that when cholinesterase inhibitor, like organophosphates, like sarin, okay, it interrupts the esterase, the breaking of the protein, which is acetylcholine, which is the neurotransmitter in the vegetative thing. So if you're going to disrupt the breaking apart, it's going to leave the synapse jammed in the on position, which means slowing down. You're going to have your brakes jammed on if you have sarin in your system. Any organophosphate, it all works the same. The antidote kicks in the fight or flight. Epinephrine, adrenaline, atropine, that's deadly nightshade. It dilates the pupils. It makes you think the woman is interested, but the belladonna merely has a sympathetic nervous system stimulant, okay, like epinephrine, adrenaline. And so it goes in the other direction. It hits the gas. So when you jam the things on in the slow position, now the reason that you can have idiot America listening to Von Braun's disciple who worked slaves to death of Pina Munda under the Nazis, and you've got a gun-carrying Nazi hiding out in the Vatican after running the rape. Of course, his brother is guilty of the rape, you know, but he's just driving the getaway car the way the panic racket sales people and getaway drivers do. Just note that Jimmy Dore is very nice, but he is mixing up socialism and nationalism, two completely different things, even though Hitler put them together paradoxically. Because if you're going to be socialist, you're not going to be antisocial to people outside your fucking goddamn borders. Ugh.
From that country. That's basically what's been happening. And so we've been trying to overthrow Syria since the 50s, right? That's not a secret, right? I think even the CIA admits that they did that. That's right when they overthrew Iran, which also had a democratically elected president. They overthrew him. Why? Because he wanted to spread democracy across the Middle East, and the CIA likes strong-armed theocracies like Saudi Arabia, because you can count on them to do the bidding of corporate America. You can't count on democracies to do the bidding of corporate America. So that's why the CIA, that's why they don't like democracies. That's why they don't like socialism. That's why they don't like leaders who take the resources of their country and give it back to their own people. And what's happening in Syria also, I don't know if you've reported on this part of it, but we have, is that they're trying to send a natural gas pipeline to Europe, and that natural gas is going to come from Qatar. And so that's why Russia doesn't want Syria to be overthrown, because they don't want to have that competition for selling fossil fuels to Europe that's going to come from Saudi Arabia. Now, have you heard about that?
Oh, absolutely. And I think Israel is also involved in this Qatari pipeline. And certainly Russia has its own, you know, geopolitical and its own other interests. But the bottom line in terms of Russian involvement in Syria is that they were invited by the Syrian government to participate in fighting terrorism.
Right.
And the American-led coalition was not invited, and their presence in Syria is illegal. And not only that, they've attacked Syrian civilians, they've attacked Syrian army posts, including September 2016. And some days after that, there was a manufactured incident of a convoy being attacked, and it turned out it was done by one of the terrorist factions. And this illegal attack murdering between 60 and 80 or more Syrian soldiers and enabling ISIS to take over in Deir ez-Zor was said non-existent. And the Americans never apologized for it. And there have been many incidents of them attacking Syrian positions. In terms of the pipelines being one of the major reasons, yes. But Israeli involvement is also another major reason.
Yes, there's not just... Go ahead. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's staggering. I mean, there's actually so many statements, declarations from Israeli leadership themselves saying, well, actually, we have no problem with these Al-Qaeda, ISIS terrorists. No, they're the lesser evil. Well, that's why they're treating them in their hospitals. That's why they're funneling them in and out of Syria via the occupied Syrian Golan. So, and that's why it's attacking Syria so many times.
Are you surprised at how easily propaganda works on America? Are you surprised at the ubiquity of the forwarding of the government message, which is really the military-industrial complex message? It just gets repeated by the mainstream media in the United States ad nauseum without any critical... I mean, no one. They're sitting there. They're literally gushing, emotionally gushing over missiles taking off to go bomb people in another country. Is that shocking to you? And how do other people around the world see the U.S. media's coverage of this?
I guess, sadly, to me, it's not shocking because I've been very focused on Syria and Palestine and Yemen, which nobody talks about, and, you know, which Saudi Arabia is massacring for a number of years. So the hypocrisy of the media and these Western leadership statements or things that go on in the United Nations don't surprise me. They gross me out intensely. But when you consider how much, I think you talk more regularly and you know more about ownership of the corporate media and who's really funding or what agenda they have. When somebody off radar speaks out, if they say something that does not align to this message, then they will be smear campaigned. And the general public, I really don't blame them. I mean, you would expect that they would remember the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador who cried about incubator babies and pretended to be a nurse, but they don't. You would expect they'd remember the lies about Gaddafi's troops on Viagra raping people, and they don't. And there's so many manufactured lies in all the various conflicts, or otherwise known as invasions, in the recent, decade or two or more. That people should know about. But, I think that if there were more Jimmy Dores out there, maybe people would be more aware. But, when people are reading from a script, literally reading from a script, about the latest atrocities in Syria, then the public will be, they'll be remain ignorant. And when human rights groups, so-called, which are really many of them the arm of the State Department or other, nations, but, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, when they are bleating the same chorus, the same lies, when Ken Roth is tweeting about Aleppo and it's actually Shijai, Gaza, or it's another area of Syria, or it's an area that's been destroyed or attacked by the precious rebels, and when, Amnesty International claims that they have evidence about torture in a prison called Saydnaya, but they have no researchers on the ground, and they grossly overestimate the even possible numbers that could have been in that complex, but people believe these things. I mean, it's a very large and uphill battle we're fighting in our efforts to educate people. So, no, I'm not surprised, but I am disgusted.
I am surprised, actually, because, I lived through the Iraq War here, and we all figured, Hillary Clinton didn't win the election in 2008 against Barack Obama because of the Iraq War, and she was for it. People are sick and tired of these wars. Donald Trump got elected partly on the basis of that he's a non-interventionist, that his whole thing is that we're getting bogged down in the Middle East and we should get the hell out of there. And that's a reason why a lot of people voted for him, and you see what just happened. Within 100 days, the military-industrial complex got their hands on him, and they turned him just that quick. And he's bombing again, and he's bombing in everywhere now, about Yemen and Syria, and he's provoking North Korea, and he's doing everything he can possibly do that the military-industrial complex wants, because he wants to keep America pretty scared so we keep spending way more money than ever necessary on our military, which is what's happening. It's working perfectly, and they got rid of the draft. We used to have a draft in the United States, which got people out protesting against wars, but they got rid of that, and they just made everybody so poor that they can't afford college, so now you have to go into the military if you want to go to college or get a decent job. So that's how they do it, and nobody protests that because that's just capitalism. So tell me Tell me a little bit more about the white helmets, because I have a feeling that they're not on the up and up. Are they?
Well, I have to commend a dear friend and colleague of mine, Vanessa Bealey, who's really done, you know, so much in-depth research. Many of us have researched, but she very doggedly pursued this myth of these so-called rescuers in Syria. White Helmets were founded in 2013 by a British ex-military officer. They've been funded by well over $100 million, according to different public records, by Western nations. Their main line is that they are rescuing civilians in Syria, presumably from Syrian and or Russian atrocities, and they claim to be volunteers and neutral, but by now we've seen so many, not only their Facebook and social media accounts showing them, you know, in one instance wearing a white helmet, in another instance holding a weapon or firing a cannon, but also there are instances of them actually wearing the white helmets and standing with Al-Qaeda or ISIS flags, terrorist flags. And then furthermore, when I was in Aleppo last time, it was November 2016, my fourth time to Aleppo. And while I didn't at that time go to East Aleppo because it wasn't yet liberated, I did meet people from East Aleppo who had fled the presence of these terrorists, including al-Nusra, including, you know, Al-Qaeda in Syria, including the various factions that the West says are moderates. These two families that I interviewed said they'd tried many times to flee before, and they were prevented from fleeing by these different terrorist factions who were hoarding food and medicine and giving in medical treatment only to their own. When I asked about the white helmets, these people had never heard of them. Later, Aleppo was liberated, you know, eastern areas of Aleppo. And so, again, Vanessa Bealey was on the ground there interviewing people, and then later on, a number of other independent people. Pierre Lecorf, a Frenchman living in Aleppo for the last year, he also has done a lot of documentation. And he, Vanessa, and Carla Ortiz, a Brazilian actress, Bolivian. But many people have gone to these areas, including the White Helmets headquarters. And guess what, Jimmy?
What?
The White Helmets headquarters is littered with Al-Qaeda and ISIS slogans and flags. And Islamic, and I don't mean normal Islam, I mean these extremist Wahhabi, Takfiri Islam paraphernalia and slogans. And so, you know, the claim that these white helmets are neutral, given all these facts, is completely laughable. And then the fact that they only operate in Al-Qaeda and other terrorist areas. And then, as you know, I'll just take this moment, if I may, Jimmy, just to clear one thing up. In the UN press panel, press conference panel that you probably have seen, I said a number of things. And, you know, some of these vulture media that, you know, issued their own articles or fact checks on me went after 2 points, totally negating the points I made about the 1.5 million people suffering under terrorist bombings and snipings for many years, and the various other points I made in 25, 30 minutes. The 2 points they focused on, one, I will admit, I'm human and I didn't articulate as well as I could have. So the one is about children possibly being recycled. So I will say I cannot prove that this one particular child has been recycled, sometimes called Aya. What I can say is the White Helmets have participated in faking media, and there are many examples, including the so-called mannequin challenge. And also, not only the White Helmets, but these various dubious media sources like the Aleppo Media Center, the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, and even a group of filmmakers in Egypt were arrested making a film purporting to be in Aleppo under Assad's bombs. So what my main point was, and I should have articulated better, was that we need to be very careful and very, you know, we need to question the media we're being presented. And the other point was that I mentioned the Al-Quds Hospital. My only error there was in saying that it hadn't been hit, because I cannot prove it wasn't hit, but it was not reduced to rubble as the MSF or Doctors Without Borders stated.
That so why would the Why would the Doctors Without Borders state that it was reduced to rubble if it hadn't been?
Because they were relying on their sources on the ground, which happened to be terrorist affiliated doctors or these various independent unnamed activists. Okay. I know many people, including a doctor from Aleppo, Dr. Nabil Antaki, who speaks excellent English and French, who went to the Al-Sukri district where Al-Quds Hospital is located, and it's still standing. Vanessa Bealey went there. Pierre Lecorf went there. Various other independents have gone there. It's still standing. It wasn't reduced to rubble, and there's no way in hell, even if it had been reduced to rubble, that it was rebuilt. So, you know...
No, we've seen... I've documented... you know, it's amazing that... I saw the press conference you're talking about. That's when I first became aware of you, and that's when we first covered all this stuff. And it was through your reporting, your firsthand reporting on the ground, right, which no one else is doing. And that's what you're exposing, that these people are just reporting everything second and third hand. There aren't any human rights. And the people who are the white helmets on the ground there, you're saying, started by British military, and they get funded. So I've seen all the disinformation in the mainstream media, and we show how people, they report it. And we show how when they call them rebels when they're in Syria, and they're called terrorists when they're in Iraq. And we showed how we funded Al Qaeda when we called them freedom fighters, anti-Soviet, and then they turned into Osama bin Laden, who then attacked us, and now they're the worst people in the world who cut people's heads off with knives.
And I'm going to jump in here because it's all that kind of gruesome stuff, so let's get it out of the way. Of course, the flip side of running rape of the world with pics from Jeffrey Epstein's jet, of course, which both Trump and Clinton have flown in numerous times. The flip side of running the rape of the world is framing innocent whistleblowers to cover up the trail back to U.S. Back to us. That's you, gringo. How many kids did former House Speaker Dennett... Gringa. Let's not be sexist here. How many kids did former House Speaker Dennett Hastert, H-A-S-T-E-R-T? Maybe he was twisted by being named after a rabbit shirt. No. Turkey was using their goods on Dennis Hastert to force his vote against Armenians, putting that blood on our goddamn hands. The U.S. is in denial of the first genocide of the 20th century in Armenia, as is Turkey. So this is from Matt Agoris, the Free Thought Project. Julian Assange, for the last 6 years, has been persecuted and held captive because of rape allegations. Allegations that we have now found out are entirely fabricated by police. Today marks the first time Assange has gone public with his version of events surrounding the rape. Allegations for which he was arrested in 2010. On 14th of August 2010, SW sent the following text to a friend. I want him. Unquote. Followed by several more of similar content, all referring to me, Julian Assange, in the lead up to the events in question. On 17th August, SW wrote that we had long foreplay, but nothing happened. Then it got better. On 17th of August, after all, sex had occurred. SW wrote to a friend that it turned out all right, unquote. Other than STD pregnancy risk, on the 20th of August, SW, while at the police station, wrote that she did not, quote, she did not want to put any charges on Julian Assange, unquote. But that, quote, the police were keen on getting their hands on him, unquote. These are all from SW's texts. And that she was, quote, shocked when they arrested him, unquote. And it says, sick, shocked. But I think that's Julian. Because she only wanted him to take a test, unquote. On 21st of August, SW wrote that, quote, that she, quote, did not want to accuse, unquote, Julian Assange, quote, for anything, unquote. And that it was, quote, the police, it was police who made up the charges, unquote, quote. Sick. So, don't know. On 23rd August, AA, the other woman whose case was dropped in August 2015, wrote to SW that it was important that she went public with her story so that they could form public opinion for their case. On 23rd August, SW wrote that it was the police, not herself, who started the whole thing. On 26th of August, AA wrote to SW that they ought to sell their stories for money to a newspaper. On 28th of August, AA wrote that they had a contact on the biggest Swedish tabloid, and SW wrote that their lawyer negotiated with the tabloid. So, That was from anonhq.com. Woman won, 80 people worldwide remember. No, that was some other story, but let's go back to this.
Investigators has this piece out talking about what it was like being attacked by people who thought that he was a kind of a pedophilia king. And Steele thinks there is something to Pizzagate. Whether or not these restaurant owners were in on anything like that is still remains to be determined. But
what was it? I have something to segue from there. Yes, if racist, gun-clutching, immigrant-bashing little dicks like Alec Jones talk about Pizzagate, I find another source and handle. The rape thing goes to my core and is too important to be sloppy about. It's precisely the spot to hit on either side of anything. The flip side of running rape biz with pics from Jeffrey Epstein's jet is framing innocent whistleblowers to cover up the trail. That was the point of that little segue. But before we get back to Eva Bartlett...
But it does need to be investigated. Tony, your thoughts?
I take it Dr. Fetzer and Scott Bennett, in the time that they were exclusively doing False Flag Weekly News, went in a lot to Pizzagate. This article by Elefantis speaks of, you know, a community business and the weird conspiracy theorists that show up, sometimes armed, demanding to know where the pedophilia happened and where the kids are being locked up and all of that kind of thing. He's sort of making fun of that and saying we're going back to normal life. But
Greg Allegheny is a friend of Scott Bennett on Facebook, of course. And the oil war that he's bemoaning, you know, like we're arming both sides. And so you got the CIA backing the Al-Qaeda shithooks that the Pentagon is drone bombing. Well, he's thinking, oh, no, look, we're betraying our men, soldiers over there. But I'm saying every soldier in Iraq is part of a crime. You cannot prosecute W as the author of that war crime without all the participants being also party. And so the soldiers in Iraq are guilty of the crime. And I have a fundamental difference with Scott Bennett's attitude about it. So I think he's a pretty right-wing guy, but... I'm backing him up on telling the truth about, of course, the gun-crutching, immigrant-bashing little dick Alex Jones isn't going to offend the, you know, the Bible-thumping Scott Bennett, you know. But I got to listen to Scott Bennett because he was in prison with Lucifer's banker author Bradley Bergenfeld, and Edward Snowden was overseeing it all, and getting a similar epilepsy to my friend Jim Wilcott. When you get out of the CIA, they don't want you to cause a stir by dropping dead, so you'll stagger off with epilepsy like Jim had, like Snowden had. It was Delanton, half a dozen years later, that he was diagnosed and kind of, but he only had normal consciousness in his dreams, he said. So, and he would like drink coffee by the dozen cup, but
Robert David Steele, who is a former CIA guy and I think probably still part of the deep state, he's a very outspoken proponent of open intelligence, and he believes this intimidation and blackmailing of politicians through setting them up with especially pedophilia and other sexual dark deeds is very endemic.
Wag the dog. So that's going on in the background. I don't want to miss any of Eva Bartlett. So,
but remember, Eva, we use good Christian bombs that don't blow up babies or women. It dodges them and it finds just soldiers and it hugs them to death. That's the way. There's only certain ways you can kill people, and you have to use a Christian bomb made in America by a good Christian.
Well, some of these are also, you know, Al-Qaeda bombs made in Syria using gas canisters stuffed with explosives and shrapnel and fired on civilian populations. But our media doesn't seem to think that's significant.
At all.
Just on, before I forget, because I already did, there's these two villages named Fu and Kafaya, and they're in western Syria, in Idlib. And I'm sure you heard about the convoy that was attacked.
Yes.
And media had different reports in the numbers, but sources on the ground in Aleppo were saying 200 civilians, of whom 116 children. And one of those sources was an Aleppo MP, and others were people that Vanessa, who's back in Syria, Vanessa Lee, she took testimonies of civilians who had survived that massacre. Really sadistic massacre, and I think some important points are, our media described it as a hiccup.
Yeah, I saw. We covered that. I saw the CNN guy. So it's going to keep going on, these evacuations, after this hiccup. He literally said that, a hiccup,
yeah.
The slaughter of 116 children, 200 people. When it's done by people who we're supporting, it's called a hiccup. But when it's done by people we're opposed to, we have to bomb them because we're humanitarians.
And the thing is, it followed a week or two after the alleged, still unproven gas attacks. Unproven in the sense we don't know, we cannot prove, and it's highly unlikely that the Syrian government or Russians did it. It's far more likely that the so-called rebels, otherwise known as terrorists in Syria, did it. They have a history of doing so. They have possession of the only chlorine factory, as documented by Time, even back in 2012 or 13. And they have, as documented by Seymour Hersh, access to sarin, thanks to Turkey and other agents. And it's not in Syria's interest to use gas attacks when they can use conventional bombs to fight terrorists. But just a week or two after, I forget the chronology, there's a sick, savage attack on civilians, mostly women, children, elderly, and ill, leaving Fu and Kafaya, where they've been besieged since March 2015, denied food, denied medical care, truly besieged, not like all this crap they were talking about, Aleppo or Ghouta or now Idlib, truly besieged, truly suffering, and these people are attacked. And that's a hiccup.
And that's a hiccup, and that's how... So we've seen the Western media's just blatant lies, right? So the whole thing is a big lie about why we're... You know, you ask people, why are we in Syria? And people, they don't even... I mean, in America, when I ask people, why do you think we're in Syria? And they always kind of pause like, wow, I never thought about it. It's hilarious. Why are we there? We're there because of Western imperialism at the behest of the petrodollar. That's why we're there.
Yeah.
Eva, we have to say goodbye right now, but you're on your way back to Syria, correct?
I am, yeah. I should be there in the near future.
Okay, so good luck. Please stay safe, and I hope you check back in with us if you can. Whenever you can, let us know. And
absolutely,
if you have an update and you want to get the message out, we'll certainly let people know.
And Jimmy, I just have to say thank you for using your platform and your humor and your intelligence to actually share the truth, because it's been immensely frustrating to see the lies. So really, thank you so much for what you're doing.
I appreciate it. No, you're the one who's really doing the courageous stuff. I'm just sitting here in my studio. So you're doing the work. You're actually on the ground. And I'm just re-reporting the stuff that you're actually letting people know. And if it wasn't for you, nobody would know anything. So Eva Bartlett, do you have a website or anything that we can tell people to go to, our blog?
Yeah, I have my old blog from my Gaza days. It's ingaza.wordpress.com.
Okay. Everybody check it out, and we'll have you back on as soon as you have some new stuff to report from Syria. Eva Bartlett, thank you very much.
As there was no secondary explosion, rather a large cloud, a large white cloud, arose from this facility, blew southward at a very stiff wind over this village where all those poor people were killed. Now, that's a far cry, a very far cry, from what the United States and the New York Times and everybody else is saying, namely, Bashar al-Assad. Bashar al-Assad deliberately used a chemical bomb or missile on this little village. That's just as false as saying Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction or Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11.
9/11/01, of course, when there was the Pentagon Air Defense holiday for drone strikes, 2 drone strikes, 3 WTC demolitions. But, of course, he doesn't have time to say that. And we'll get back to him. But so these white helmet death squads in the snuff film are handling the supposed poison victims with their bare hands, and they don't die. Obviously, they did not die from poison dropped from the outside. Okay, they may have died from the needle stuck into the heart of the one-year-old on the film that you're pointing to from this fugitive death squad doctor.
Hi,
in that Academy Award
conservative
film.
George
God,
Will is joining MSNBC as soon as they can make sure he has no ties to the Kremlin. This is happening. This is happening. Remember their slogan used to be lean forward. Yeah, I think they did, and then they hit their head on something, and now they're leaning right. Gretchen Carlson, Megyn Kelly, George Will. George Will.
We haven't gone down the road of Islamophobia like, for instance, has Alex Jones, like, for instance, has Dr. Fetzer. We identify Islamophobia and its geopolitical strategic uses, and its
October 7th, 2016 marks the 15th anniversary of the invasion and occupation of Afghanistan by U.S.-led NATO forces.
Like that of Rita Katz,
15 years since the bombs began raining down on the country.
Need some balance, and I'm
15
trying to
years
get,
of drone strikes and civilian
issue,
massacres,
Kevin.
Detainees and prison torture, insurgency and bombings, warlords and drug lords and CIA kickbacks. 15 years of death, 15 years of destruction. And still, like a decades-long nightmare, it continues.
I'm announcing an additional adjustment to our posture. Instead of going down to 5,500 troops by the end of this year, the United States will maintain approximately 8,400 troops in Afghanistan into next year through the end of my administration. The narrow missions assigned to our forces will not change. They remain focused on supporting Afghan forces and going after terrorists.
Enforcing the Logan Act, essentially prohibiting private citizens from negotiating with foreign governments in disputes with the United States. The Logan Act background story is actually a really interesting one, and we'll include links to that as well. It goes back to 1798.
But I'm just going to use this little segue to from Noah, what no one is telling you about Flynn's resignation, because to remind everybody, Flynn was head of the DIA when they produced that report on the Salafist principality. The West was backing to overthrow, guess who?
On the morning of April 4, 2017, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, on the verge of a military victory against the terrorist insurgency in his country and on the eve of peace talks that would secure his position as president, decided to use chemical weapons he didn't have against a target of no military significance in front of as many cameras as possible to cross the one red line that would ensure his own government's downfall. Soon after, the Academy Award-winning White Helmets, noted for their Oscar-worthy performances, persistent proximity to al-Qaeda, and financial dependence on U.S. aid, bravely risked their lives, handling Syrian victims barehanded against every protocol in the book. Without presenting a shred of evidence, President Donald Trump boldly launched a military strike against Shayrat Airfield because
national security interest,
promising to help the
beautiful babies.
Offer does not apply to babies in Gaza, Yemen, Pakistan, or basically anywhere else. That military strike, a volley of 59 Tomahawk land attack missiles of which 23 actually made it to the target, failed to take out a single runway or even keep the airbase from operating for even 24 hours, but was a complete success for ExxonMobil, Raytheon, and Donald Trump. No one could question the wisdom of striking Syria, except Donald Trump, and no one could oppose such a move, except Russia. The Trump train, still convinced by candidate Trump,
and by listening to guys like Lindsey Graham drop bombs here, drop bombs on Assad, drop bombs on ISIS, oh, but they're fighting each other, so maybe we shouldn't do that.
And,
well, what a convenient place to segue to Trump's first pick, Michael Flynn.
Where a private citizen from Philadelphia, Dr. George Logan, went to France to try and smooth over some of the revolution actions that were interfering with the U.S. James, this story, as we've talked about, everything's kind of topsy-turvy. A lot of people who have been active the last 8 years are all kind of going down in their hidey hole, and the people who have been asleep for 8 years are very wide awake and very agitated, even just kind of talking with a neighbor and just, you know, talking cats and stuff. He wanted to talk about, you know, did you see this? And you see this guy? People are pretty amped up, dude. What's your take on the Flynn situation?
Well, everyone's amped up, and both people on both sides of the spectrum are looking at the wrong issues and thinking of it in the wrong way. It's interesting, as you point out, yourself and myself, and I'm sure many other people in the alt media are seeing Logan Act and alarm bells ring, because the other side of that is, of course, Bilderberg and groups like that are themselves a violation of the Logan Act, and every U.S. Citizen, private citizen, that goes there to negotiate with the foreign leaders of governments that are there at Bilderberg every year are in violation of the Logan Act. The other part of Logan Act lore that we should bring up is the fact that it was passed, signed into law in 1799 by President Adams. It has only ever been used to charge one person ever, and it has never been used to successfully prosecute anyone ever in the whatever couple hundred year history of the Logan Act now, because it's pretty much unprosecutable at this point. It's a clear abrogation of First Amendment rights. If you look at the person who was actually charged under it, some Pennsylvania farmer or something, it was because he wrote an op-ed basically just saying that he thought that the Louisiana Purchase should be given back to France or whatever. I mean, it was ridiculous and unprosecutable. It's a stupid law, but the point is it Bilderberg is on its face a violation of the Logan Act. All the U.S. citizens attending Bilderberg every year are in violation of it. It's never brought up. It's never been a political issue. No one cares about the Logan Act until there's a political, you know, brouhaha that can be used to their advantage about it. Flynn won't be prosecuted under it, precisely because A, it's unprosecutable, and B, they don't want to set that precedent. They just want to throw it out there and get people kind of acquainted with it and kind of give the insinuation that there was some sort of breach of law going on here, and then, you know, it'll be swept under the rug, but of course it will be etched in people's minds, like your neighbor and other people who kind of just tune into the news just enough to get whatever their political flavor of news is. Again, there are so many incredibly important issues going on here, including, as you point out, where did these transcripts of the phone calls come from? Of course, from the NSA, and I'll throw a link into an article I was reading earlier this morning about how one of the congressmen who's just outraged that they were recording Flynn's phone calls and listening in was one of the congressmen who was all for the NSA's ability to record and monitor all U.S. Anyone's phone calls, right? It's all fine, except until it's one of the people in the government. Who would?
So could you convince Putin to get Assad to step aside?
Well, they've been trying to do that. Yeah. Could I? I don't think it's that important, to be honest with you. I think, frankly, let's say you get rid of Assad or you knock out that government. Who's going to take over? The people that were backing, and then you're going to have, like, Libya? Mm-hmm.
Concluded that this was seventh-dimensional backgammon to make China afraid of the U.S.'s willingness to spend $100 million in a fearsome show of failing to destroy a single airfield. Throughout the world, people rejoice as a horrible secular regime in the Middle East is replaced by yet another peace-loving band of ragtag human rights campaigners and child beheaders motivated by a desire to subdue the armies of Rome in an apocalyptic confrontation in Dubuque. The chemicals for the previous Red Line attack in Syria have since been proven to come from Libya with U.S. approval, but that's probably not relevant to this case. The CIA has released declassified report after declassified report showing that the plan to topple Syria's government has been in the works for decades, but this just shows that they were right all along. The mainstream media unquestioningly asserts that the story is true because the U.S. government says so, but that's okay because we all know the MSM is full of unbiased truth-tellers and dig hard to get the raw facts on every story.
We see these beautiful pictures at night from the decks of these two U.S. Navy vessels in the Eastern Mediterranean. I am tempted to quote the great Leonard Cohen, "I'm guided by the beauty of our weapons," and they are beautiful pictures.
Even members of Congress think the story is a load of hogwash, but that's okay because they're probably crazy.
Because I don't think Assad would have done that. It does not serve his interests. It would tend to draw us into that civil war even further.
Who do you think is behind it? Who do you think is behind it?
Meanwhile, the White House has released a report on its intelligence about the chemical attack that refutes its own version of the story, but that's okay because when has the White House ever lied people into war? This man doesn't exist, and if you think he does, you're an enemy of humanity who should apologize for having been born. Likewise, him, her, him, and him. And him and her. This is the 100% true story of the Sirius strikes, and if you support sites like The Corporate Report that question it in any way, you are a moonbeam, fake news, tyrant-loving, hippie pinko Russian agent, and should commit ritual suicide immediately. If you love your country and or liberty, NASCAR, supermodels, TV, water slides, or your mother, you will not question this story in any way. Ever. This message has been brought to you by the Friends of the Brookings Institute, Raytheon, Genie Oil, Oded Yunon, ICIASIS, and the New York Times. Because ignorance is strength.
Now I'm gonna play something nice so I can stand and listen to this again. And
together in the end, life will go on.